My name is Vaughn Bryan. I'm the executive director at Metropolitan Family Services, and I'm responsible for shepherding Communities Partner for Peace, which is funded by the Partnership for Safe and Peaceful Communities. I came to this work back in 2009. I moved here from New York. I worked for Chicago Public Schools. About 4 months in, they asked me to build the Safe Passage Program. So that's what I did. So that was my first sort of foray in the city government here in Chicago. After 2 years, I became the chief program officer at the Chicago Park District. During that time, I actually sat on a board of what is now called Chicago Thrive, or Thrive Chicago. And I met Rick Estrada, who was the CEO of Metropolitan Family Services. And then fast forward to 2017, we meet at a Leadership Greater Chicago event, and he had, you know, Communities Partner for Peace was incubating, and he asked me if I would come help him build it. So that's how I came to the work.
And Frank, you?
Well, you talked about the property taxes and the mayor earlier. Well, I'm one of those lifelong residents who've been here who are paying property taxes. Basically grew up in Humboldt Park community in the city of Chicago, and been through some of the trials and tribulations that those communities have faced over the years. Got involved with a guy by the name of Herb Spergel 100 years ago, a professor who basically...
You and me, we've been around a long time.
Yeah, who basically was doing stuff around violence, in particular with gangs and so forth. And from that, prior to coming where I am right now, I'm at UCAN, a child welfare organization, where I am the director of violence intervention prevention services. But prior to that, I worked for some 15 years for Cure Violence, formerly known as Ceasefire, which was using parts of the Spergel model in trying to reduce violence in some of the most devastated areas of the city of Chicago. As the director of violence intervention prevention services today at UCAN, my job is basically to carry on that type of work in trying to reduce violence in those communities that are most devastated by violence in the city. My particular community was with an emphasis in the North Lawndale community, as well as one of the Southside communities as Roseland.
Now, Frank, explain what that model is that you're just alluding
basically,
to.
Basically, that model is to work with indigenous workers, what we call credible messengers, from those communities that are being services devastated by violence. We hire people who've been there, who've done that, who may have served some time, may have been involved in the gang life, who have a vested interest, because those people, whether they did time or not, you know, when they're coming out of the prison system, they're not going to Winnetka. They're going right back to those neighborhoods where they came from. And more likely than not, they have a vested interest there because they have children there. They have grandparents there. They have parents there who have to navigate through those minefields we call the dangerous spots on the block. We try to bring, not always, you know, not just all of people from that community, but most of the people, if you're going to have an impact in that community, you have to have people from that community to take the lead in trying to reduce the ills that are in that community. And as you know, lately, the number one topic we've been talking about has been the violence that's being perpetrated in some of the communities that we're representing throughout the black and brown communities in the city of Chicago.
So I would just add to that that, you know, not only do we go in with our credible messages to stop the violence, but we offer them case management services. So whether they need education, job training, behavioral health services, home, you know, housing, whatever it is they need to turn their lives around and live empowered lives, we want to offer that. The other parts of the model are, we, you know, you live in Chicago, so you know the Park District has Night Out in the Park, so you can go to movies in the park or Shakespeare in the Park, that sort of thing. So we have events three nights a week during the summertime in the nine communities we're in, just to bring positivity to those communities and positive activity so people can go outside and just, you know, fellowship in their communities in a safe way. And then the last piece of the model is the Metropolitan Peace Academy, where we professionalize street outreach work. So all of the outreach workers have a standard of practice that, you know, community members can trust because they've had this training. And even though we wouldn't use the language that we work with the police, we have a professional understanding, and we want them to know, here's our lane and what we do and what you should expect from us, so that when we're navigating and both working on reducing violence, that we can do that in a respectful and coordinated fashion, just in the sense of, you know, where we stop and start, and we know where you stop and start.
And I'd love to hear what both of you think about this. Start with you, Frank. Many times when I've heard, when I've had conversations with my friends of the, just let's, I'll put it, the Republican or right-wing persuasion. I have a few friends like that. And they'll tell me when I talk about programs like yours, that's just a bunch of gangbangers and they're holding their hands. We should be tough, be harder, lock people up. Ben, you're just your typical knee-jerk, bleeding heart liberal, et cetera, and so forth, okay? I've had many conversations like this going back since the moment I moved to the city of Chicago in 1981. That's how long I've been living here. So what's your response when people, I know you must have heard these responses if I heard them.
It's the same old thing that we hear about more often than not when you're running for an election, right? We're going to lock them up and throw away the key. The fact of the matter is that in this country, people eventually come out, all right? And they come out back to those communities where they're from. And, you know, they have a vested interest. People do change. Everyone can change. No matter what they may have done in their life, there is a time in their life where they realize that, you know, we've got to do something different. So you have to give people an opportunity. If you want to talk about wasted dollars, you know, it's extremely expensive to house somebody in a penitentiary. It's extremely expensive to deal with the violent injuries aftermath. You know, it costs a whole lot of money to have somebody come into a trauma unit and be treated for gunshots. I'd rather reduce violence and save that money to be able to deal with pediatric care, geriatric care, and other things. So we've got to tell people the truth. We've got to do something on the front end and on the back end as well, because there's a lot of retaliatory stuff that happens. The nine organizations that Vaughn alluded to, Community Partners for Peace, you know, we're attempting to do that. We just don't believe in just throwing someone away and holding something against them for the rest of their lives. We want them to be at the table, because who knows best about the trials and tribulations of what people are going through in that neighborhood than the people who've experienced those trials and tribulations. So we want to get those people involved. Not all the people we hire are ex-felons. We do have professionals on board, caseworkers, social workers, and so forth, but you better have that type of population. So I would tell you, don't believe that, because that's not necessary. We're not going to lock anybody up and throw away the key. People eventually do come out, and it's very, very expensive to house people in the prison. And I think you see that in Washington with the legislation around the prison sentences and so forth for certain crimes and whatnot. They're starting to see the bigger picture. We need to do something else. In terms of the light in the night, I do want to stress that the light and night activities that we're doing, we do three nights a week with, you know, not only that target population that we're trying to get to and talk to and have them change their way of life, but also the entire community, because we're going into some areas that have basically abandoned whatever resources are there. We're going into areas where a park may have been abandoned because of the danger in that park of being shot. We want to get people. We want to get their children. We want to get their parents. We want to get the guys to come back out and understand this park is a sanctuary. Why shouldn't your elders or your young children come and play and have a good time in that park? And if you're involved in that life, you can understand that safety is a priority even for your own loved ones and whatnot. So let's make this a sanctuary and leave this alone. And we're doing things, whether it's a barbecue, having food out there, to having music out there, to having live bands out there, to playing musical chairs with women, children, adults, you name it, we're involved. Having arts and crafts where people are finally coming back in, because they see us out there, they feel safe, and the guys themselves realize that, hey, that's a sanctuary. Let's leave that alone. Let's let the community have that peace in that particular area, because their own parents and family members get involved in that.
So I think the thing I would add to that is just the human part of it is, to your friends who, you know,
friends in quotes.
Yeah, your friends in quotes is how would they want their friends and family members to be treated if they fell on hard times? Like, when you have resources, your kids have a long rope to make mistakes, and you're going to continue to support them regardless of what happens, because you want them to ultimately live a productive life. Now, we know the history of systemic racism in this city. We know about discrimination, especially from the housing perspective. I mean, we know the history of gangs and organized crime in the city of Chicago. So when you add the racial element to it, you know, honestly, as a white person, you have an off ramp, because organized crime was in with the police. They're in with unions. So you end up getting a union job, and there's police and fire and other employees that ultimately probably have that background in their family. Right. But their family members found an off-ramp for them, and we're just saying, hey, the same thing is true for all Americans. Yeah. So treat us and treat other people in the same way that you would want to be treated. The other thing I want to add, too, is that the communities we're in are Austin, East and West Garfield Park, North Lawndale, Humboldt Park, Little Village, Back of the Yards, Inglewood, and West Inglewood. So those are the nine communities that we're in. There are nine of the most violent cities in Chicago. And we're also, you know, about to add to the mix because there's some other funding that, you know, we've inherited from Cure Violence that is going to bring more partners and more communities to the table.
I just wanted to mention that this is one of the first times in the history, like I said, I've been here a long time, that we've had so many organizations to get together with the help of various funding sources that have pumped some well over $75 million into this collaboration, that so many organizations have gotten together and said, we're going to work together. Rather than player hate and fight against each other, we're going to work together because we have a common goal to reduce violence in our communities. The last point I wanted to make that you alluded to is brown and black people deserve mercy just like any other race. You know, no one race is better off than another, and when it comes to providing them with mercy and stuff for something that they have done, some kind of act they may have committed. We all deserve a chance to change. And I really want to put that forth, because many of the guys, several years ago, I had the Attorney General's office contact us regarding the kind of guys that we hire and the relapse level in the Cure Violence model. And we look like at over 300 employees, and of those 300 employees, over a 10-year period, we found that maybe six of them had reoffended, of which three had been acquitted. Mm-hmm. I'll match that record with the police department, with politicians, with anybody else that's out there when it comes to people who reoffend and so forth.
Listen, you're preaching to the choir in this one. One of my favorite, and I'm not going to, this is me speaking. This is not Frank and this is not Vaughn, but I'm just going to say this. When Donald Trump gets in trouble, all of a sudden, he's got rights, you know, all of a sudden, he's complaining about overzealous prosecutors. All of a sudden, he's a big believer in the Constitution. I'm surprised he doesn't buy a membership in the ACLU when he's in trouble, Frank Perez. But when it's some guy in Chicago gets caught up in it, and it gets a criminal record, it's like he's a thug, he's a murderer, you know, he's a criminal, he's a lowlife. He's denigrated all people who have no records, anybody who comes to this country from the southern border. So don't get me started. You guys are both like, man, you're going too political on us. But that's just, when I hear you, that's what triggered my response.
Well, that was my point around mercy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
There's you know, no so I hear it. Yeah. I listen to the right wingers, and I watch them like they're throwing Kim Fox under the bus right now for what went down with Jussie Smollett-gate. All right? And I'm like, all right, it's true. I believe that we should investigate and see what calls were made, this, that, and the other thing. But where were you guys when they were looking the other way when it was Daley's nephew who got into a fight in a rush street and killed a guy with one punch? And the police said, oh, well, I don't see anything wrong with that. And the old boy skated. Where were you? Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Frank, of course.
Bad, bad. Don't go. But I'm just double saying, standard. I hear you, and I just see the inconsistency.
Mm-hmm. Vaughn just said the words, it's a double standard. We treat different people differently instead of trying to be consistent with across the board. You know, our criminal justice system, you can look at that and see that. You know, if you're Caucasian or if you're brown, the sentencing laws are going to be much more harsher on you if you're brown or black and so forth. We know that for a fact.
All right.
Yet all lives matter.
Yes.
All right. All lives do matter. But yes, I get your point. All right. Now, here's something else I've been struggling with for a long time. I'm of the older persuasion. I've been around a long time. And for as long as I can remember, there's been violence in Chicago. So I have people come on the show, we talk about violence. I always say this. I go, you know, guys, it's not like violence just occurred. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been happening for as long as I can remember. It's a very violent city. Frank, you grew up in Chicago. You go to Thule High?
My brothers went to Thule High.
You're a little younger. You're too young for Thule High.
No, I remember Thule High. My older brothers went to Thule High. You know, you got to be careful with that, because I grew up in an area back in the 1970s where we were tipping 980 plus murders a year. Okay. Mm-hmm. And even in our worst, I mean, a couple of years ago, we were up to 700. And right now we're tipping about three something. In the last couple of years, 400 or 500. That's still 50% of what we were, where we were in 1970s. And remember that back then the armament wasn't as deadly as it is today. So, you know, that's a misnomer that things are getting worse. They're actually getting better. But the fact of the matter is, any violence, that's what we're trying to address. Any violence is bad for any community, and certain communities are you know, that have been segregated, that have been disenfranchised, there's a higher rate of violence than other affluent communities, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to reduce the violence with this collaboration, and we've been successful in the areas that we've actually reduced violence. So people might, like you were saying, they say, well, it's a waste of money. No, it's not. If we're able to save you money on the trauma units, on the incarceration of people, to do other things with that money, maybe for better schools, maybe for better housing and so forth, then I think it's a win-win for the entire community. Because sometimes we have that attitude that it's only over there, so I don't have, it doesn't affect me, so I don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. The violence affects the entire community, mm-hmm, when it happens, whether it's in West Humboldt Park or whether it's in North Lawndale or whether it's in Inglewood. It's affecting all of us in the city.
Mm-hmm. All right, Vaughn, I want to ask you this question, and it sort of piggybacks on what Frank was just saying. There's like different types of people. Let's just move it out from beyond this particular. There's different types of people in the world. Mm-hmm. There are people who confront any kind of challenge by punching. Mm-hmm. All right? Fight. I could think of a lot of politicians from our town. Mm-hmm. That's the way they do it. They punch. Mm-hmm. They punch. Particularly if they think they can get away with it. Mm-hmm. They'll punch harder. If it's a bigger person, then maybe they'll think twice. But punch, punch, punch. Mm-hmm. They're proud of it. Mm-hmm. All right? I'm not mentioning any names. Don't want to get you guys in political trouble. But you know who I'm talking about. Now, then there's other kinds of people who, and I know this type very well because I think I'm like this type, like, let's talk about something. Mm-hmm. Let's calm down. Let's just.
Diplomatic.
Let's mm-hmm, take a deep breath. Let's do a little breathing here. Mm-hmm. I've always believed that that type is something that should be promoted in conjunction in when we deal with violence in the city of Chicago. I think there's such an impulsiveness, mm-hmm, in the city of Chicago. People in Chicago, I've noticed, I'm not from Chicago, yeah, neither are you, so you have an advantage. Mm-hmm. But people in Chicago, it's like, I'm from Chicago, I'm tough, I'm going to show you. And they, mm-hmm, like, they just want to settle it, mm-hmm, with might, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And our mayors reinforce that to a certain degree, mm-hmm, but with the way they act and the way they mistreat people, is there a way to kind of get people to be more diplomatic, to take that deep breath and just say, you know what, let's calm down, let's chill out, I'm going to listen to what you say, mm-hmm, and I'm going to respond. Is there a way to promote that as a way to de-escalate the violence?
Absolutely, and de-escalation training is a part of the Peace Academy. So all of our outreach workers are trained in de-escalation. I mean, the police are really trained in de-escalation. The key is you have to execute on it, and you have to be accountable if you escalate a situation, especially to the point of killing somebody for something that is just unnecessary. So, yes, I think that you're absolutely correct that we need to promote that more. We need to execute on it and behave like that more. There is a time and a place for more confrontation, but that's rare. It should be rare occasions. That should be the exception, not the rule. And we can all benefit from cooler heads prevailing and understanding that we all do really want the same things. We all want the same thing for our family and our children to, you know, live prosperous lives. I mean, the vision that we want to see is that the city of Chicago is one of the safest cities in the world, where everybody can live their lives and pursue happiness. Everybody wants that. So now, obviously, capitalism brings some competition to that, but it still has to be competition within the bounds of, you know, the values we have as a country. And so we have to really live that. And that means, you know, you may not win everything, but that doesn't mean you resort to violence, because the reality, again, if you look at the history of this country, when things don't go your way, we resort to violence. And so to the point that you guys were making about how violence was before, progressively as the world has gone on, we're kinder and gentler in general, because, man, back in the day, I mean, it was like it was really dog eat dog and yeah, survival. Whereas, you know, we're moving to, hey, like, there's a different way to do things. And so progressively, you know, we're going to get better. But we have in Chicago a unique situation, because what separates us from other like cities is access to guns. And so, you know, if you took away gun violence and then you looked at all of the violence from there, then we look just like most other cities. So, you know, we have to do some things differently here, and we have to invest in it for a long period of time to get to that point. So if we, you know, for 15 years, if we can really sustain this effort and get to the point of New York and Chicago, then we would be somewhere around New York and LA. I'm sorry, 197 per year, which is that right? Big difference.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm not good at math.
Yeah.
You're telling me that if we had the same murder rate
exactly
in the city of Chicago,
shooting rate
mm-hmm. as they have in New York and Los Angeles, mm-hmm. We would have 197 murders a year by gun.
Mm-hmm.
And how many do we have this year? Do you know offhand?
I'm not sure what the current number is, but it's somewhere in this. I don't know where we are year to date. That's a good question. I think we're actually close to 400. Like, I think we were at, when we had the citywide convening, I think it was like 398.
So what is with Chicago?
Well, what you mentioned, the de-escalation, which is what we do with the Peace Academy, a lot of the stuff that's going on out there, it's not for major. It's really personality driven. You know, you call me a B-I-T-C-H. You said something to my girlfriend. You owe me a few dollars and so forth. And a lot of the violence is at the spur of the moment, not mm-hmm. thinking about it. And what our workers are trained in is how to be able to talk to individuals, get them to calm down, you know, for that first 5 minutes, and then get them away from the situation. So, for example, if you strike somebody, that person is going to be real angry at you that moment you struck them. A couple of hours from now, they still may be angry, but not as angry as they were when you first struck them. A week from now, you're going to be about, you know, the 300th person that maybe had struck them in their life. It's not going to be a big deal. So part of the training that we do is to emphasize to the workers involved in the collaboration of the nine organization is that there's always someone that can talk to somebody. If you can't be that person, there's somebody else who can get them to rationalize, is it worth you crossing that line? Look at how much you have to lose behind somebody who owes you $100 or because somebody called you a name or something. So we try to get people to think differently. That's the whole thing we're doing, because in these disenfranchised community, a lot of people don't have a lot of anything other than this thing called respect, right? So they exaggerate that respect to the point that you have to be on pins and needles around them, because anything you say could get them to go off. We've got to re-educate them to realize that there's no shame in being humble, to walk away from something.
Right. So there's a re-education, but there's also, like, you have to get to the source of why people act like that. It's they've been traumatized. So when you've been traumatized and there's some abandonment in terms of the love that you should get from your parents and your extended family, when that's not present, then you do have a snap reaction because you've been traumatized, mm-hmm. now either because of what you've seen and experienced or from some sort of abandonment that also causes trauma. So we have to understand that. And that's when you hear the term or the jargon trauma-informed care, that's what they're talking about. Keep those things in mind when you operate with these people. And then the other part of it, in terms of when you think about the four and communities partner for peace, is restorative practices. When there's, you know, an incident that occurs, then you want to restore the relationship between those two individuals. So it's important to intervene early. Like he said, like, the reality is, it could be a year away and somebody may still want to retaliate because they've been traumatized. They're not in the position of healing and forgiveness and those sort of things. It's more dog eat dog, eye for an eye. I want to one up versus being one up, because if you take it in the street, the code is like, you know, you're soft and anybody's going to run over you. That sort of thing is very important.
All right, let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you this question first, Vaughn, and then Frank, you weigh in. You can think of your answer while you're listening to him answer. And I'm asking you this question first because you told me you came from New York, all right?
Yeah, I lived in New York
before. You lived in New York, all right. Yep. So you've had experience in New York, mm-hmm. and you've had experience here in the city of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, the behavior that both of you describe that sets off violence is something that I know New Yorkers have too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because mm-hmm. there's New Yorkers that have that same chip on their shoulder that you're talking about, Frank, that sets people off. I need respect, et cetera. And I know people in LA have them too. I know it exists all over the world, but only the city of Chicago do we have a murder rate. Our murder rate is higher. So here's my question for you. What is it about the city of Chicago that leads people to settle these differences with a gun, at a greater rate than happens in New York or LA or other cities?
A couple of reasons. So one is New York and LA invested in this years ago. So if you think back to Rodney King in LA, that during that time is when LAPD got into a consent decree. So the police had to do something different based on that consent decree. They embraced community policing in a way that, you know, ultimately led them to embrace community outreach, what they call street intervention work. And they've been doing it for a 20-year period, and they had an investment. And so they had a strategy that sustained over time that, you know, really brought their murder rate down. You look at New York as well. They also have an Office of Violence Prevention there. In the city, they spend $35 million a year. That's the city putting money into that. So they've been doing it for a long period of time. And so, yeah, over time, the interventions that we're putting in place, they can work, but they have to be sustained. We are just now in 2019 opening the Office of Violence Prevention. I think it's called Public Safety and Accountability. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, Susan Lee there, who worked in L.A. before. So she's seen what's happened in other cities. And so I feel really good about where we are, you know, with Lori Lightfoot, with the team they're putting in place in that office. Yeah, I mean, it's a good time for us. And I think there's a lot of reason for optimism, given the infrastructure that we're building in the communities that we're in right now.
If I may, you know, Chicago, we've been at the forefront of doing this kind of work for decades. Mm-hmm. Right. And you mentioned a couple of places. You mentioned California. You mentioned New York. In fact, those two parts of the country took what we were doing. Mm-hmm. All right. And they took it to the next level. They professionalized it. They got into the city budgets and so forth. Last time I heard of anything like this, of this magnitude, getting into the city budget, was the CIN network that under Mayor Harold Washington, and that was quickly scrapped when Daley came into office. So we need violence prevention to be part of the city budget. Now, I'm always hearing that it's money issue. Well, wait a minute. It's money issue. We're not being disrespectful. We always seem to find $110 million or $120 million for law enforcement for overtime. We always seem to find money for disasters and whatnot. I would tell you that the violence that's occurring is an epidemic proportion. It's a disaster. It deserves the same kind of attention that all these other institutions. And so we need to be in that city budget and in a meaningful way, not just a couple hundred thousand, not just a couple million. If you want to have an impact in reducing violence, you have to go at it like it's epidemic, and you've got to put amounts of money in it that are going to be able to treat that. In the long run, we will be saving all kinds of money, and the taxpayers will be happy with what we're doing with that money, rather than, you know, they say the definition of insanity is keep doing what you're doing and expect a different result. Mm-hmm. Come on. Aren't we tired of that?
I think the other thing to point out in this is that the good thing of when you make that investment and then simultaneously your economy is doing well. If you think about New York, they always have new people come into that city because there are jobs and there are opportunities there. So when population is increasing because you have an economy and you use that to invest in the people there that are struggling, then you have a win-win situation. And so for us, we're the only major city that's losing population, and violence is part of that. Mm-hmm. So we should look at what's been done. So yeah, we might have figured out how to intervene, but we got to support that intervention for a sustained period of time, because if we get our economy going as well simultaneously, then again, this is one of the greatest cities to live on earth.
Yeah, the economy is going. Unfortunately, it's not going for everybody at the same rate.
Exactly.
And I know both of you know what I'm talking about. Frank Perez, Vaughn Bryant, before I let you go, tell folks if they want to get in touch with your organizations, how they can do it, if they want to participate in some of these programs, how they can do it, all that
good information. Yeah, so first, you can go to Metropolitan Family Services website /CP4P. But I want to list the organizations. So Institute for Nonviolent Chicago, Breakthrough Urban Ministries, Alliance of Local Service Organizations, UCAN, New Life Centers, EMAN, Precious Blood Ministries of Restoration, and Target Area Development Corp. Those are all of the organizations that we work with now, and we're going to be expanding into some other organizations as well, like Enlace, like One North Side, Claritian Associates, Project Hood, Activists. So, you know, we have a great coalition. You know, one thing people say is Chicago is a city of neighborhoods. And I love that because it brings diversity throughout the city. But we got to be one Chicago on this. And that means that people from all over the city have to come together because we all have a goal of reducing violence.
All right. Fair enough. In fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to use my power. I'm going to kill that TIF deal that they're going to have in Lincoln Yards. Take that $1.3 billion and use it to fund your program. How about that? I just solved the problem of crime. Just in one talk. Show, man, I should be the mayor of the city of Chicago. Anyway, Frank Perez, Vaughn Bryant, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate bringing you back. Thank you. I appreciate you coming
in. It's been a pleasure being here.
All
thank
right.
you.
Rob Markwick is on deck. We're going to be talking politics with him when we return. Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen.